Blog Talk Radio.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
Listen to Inside the Park. Inside the park. The RSV family. My usual suspects with me. Hot baseball topic. We're just gonna jump right into it. I always thought. The RSV family. You're listening to Inside the Park. Inside the park. RSG family, what's going on? Inside the park, you're listening, you tuned in. This week is me and Hank. We got a short bullpen this week. It's just me and Hank. Mike, we put him on the DL for a week. He should be back with us next week. But Hank, you ready to get into some baseball talk?
Oh, absolutely. You know, short pen, long rest. We ready to go.
Let's do it. I guess the hottest story right now is this Justin Upton story. He is probably one of the best players to be rumored to be headed somewhere else, at least one of the best bats out there on the market. And, I mean, this is – you usually don't see a young player of Justin Upton's talent getting shipped around too often. He's a 24-year-old ball player. He's signed to a pretty team-friendly deal. I think he's got three more years on his deal. And recently, the Arizona Diamondbacks let it be known that, hey, we're going to move them. And a little backstory here, they're looking for a shortstop, a third baseman, or a major league-ready starting pitcher in return. And, you know, there's been a lot of back talk between the team. There's some sources out there within the team that are saying they just don't think Justin Upton's a winner. We talked a couple weeks ago about how the owner came out and said that he was not pleased with Justin Upton's production as to date. Hank, where you at with this thing? Would you ever consider trading Justin Upton in his age 24 season?
You know, there's a couple of things that go on with that. You look at Justin Upton, okay? Now, he's 24 years old. He's already been in the league 5 years. He's in the prime of his career, and he's an all-star caliber player. Career 275 power hitter and he's a corner outfielder. Now, there's a couple of two or three things you can look at that. Now, can we speak on his maturity level at this time? You probably could. Personally, I think the Diamondbacks are loony as hell to get rid of Justin Upton at this time. I mean, he's already shown what he's doing, what he can do. And I would jump in, I would leap at the chance to get him like that. He's a player that you can build around. You already know what his potential is. You know, he's if you think about it, RJ, he's what you would call pre-prime. I mean, you know, you figure that most major leaguers really start hitting their peak between the ages of 25 and 27. That's when they're really, you know, doing work. This man is basically, you know, grew up in the majors. So, you know, I think they are, you know, in my opinion, it sounds like they're giving up on him way too early.
Indeed. You know, I would argue, yeah, like you said, he hasn't even hit his groove yet.
Right.
And it's funny, you mentioned his maturity level, I'm sure because of what you heard from Arizona. I touched on it earlier. They said that they don't think he's a winning player. It's funny how nobody was saying that about him last year when he finished fourth in the MVP voting. And he helped the Diamondbacks get to the playoffs. Nobody was talking about his winning abilities last year. So it's kind of funny he has a non-Justin Upton type year, and all of a sudden he's not a winning player. That strikes me as a bit odd.
It strikes me as odd, too, especially when if you really pay very close attention to players of the Justin Upton ilk, you know, those very young players that really, you know, and we got a young man here in Detroit, in Austin Jackson, you know, young player, great upside, you know, they have, you're going to have those up and down seasons until you really figure out what's going on in the majors. Now, for a long time, he was a non-factor because basically the Diamondbacks was a non-factor. And all of a sudden, they have an incredible season. And, you know, you should be able, you should expect that from a player that young. And then just to give up on him, you know, that says to me a lot about, you know, that is more of an indictment, in my opinion, of Arizona versus a Justin Upton. And to be honest with you, yeah, I would leap at the chance to take him.
Well, that leads me to my my next question. We already said that, you know, they're looking for a third baseman, a shortstop, or a starting pitcher. And Buster Olney had an article earlier in the week. He said the teams that are interested in Upton as the Blue Jays, you got the Pirates who are interested, Texas, Detroit, and Atlanta. Out of all those teams, who do you think is the best fit for Upton?
You know, I would love to say Detroit. You know, I would love to say, because we definitely need a corner outfielder to really shore up that outfield. Of course, now, you know, here in Detroit, we got Quentin Berry that's kind of taking some of the pressure off. But you look at the teams right now that's looking at him, okay? You're looking at Texas. That means Texas, if they were to get him, would have to, you know, take one of those boppers out the outfield. You look at Toronto, and then you ask, is Toronto the team that's going to take him? Where are they at right now in the East? Can they afford him? Will they hang on to him? You know, you look at Atlanta, it makes some sense. But the team that I really think that it makes the most sense for him to go to is Pittsburgh. I think so because it tells that fan base that they're trying to win now. And as we talked about last week, it gives puts another bat, young bat, in that lineup to help Andrew McCutchen. McCutchen is doing it all by himself right now. He's carrying that team on his back. You put another outfielder out there that's going to help that team, and now all of a sudden now you've added cred to a nice young Pittsburgh roster.
Indeed. You touched on a couple things in that one. You know, Toronto, I think they're fading. They're fading fast. I don't think they would make a move. You brought up Pittsburgh. And I definitely agree with you. They need another bat. I just don't believe that they're all in like they probably, like their fans would want them to be. I was reading that, you know, Pittsburgh has two stud pitching prospects.
Mm-hmm.
They got Garrett Cole and Jameson Taillon, who are both number one first-round draft picks. Pittsburgh said they're not willing to give up those two guys. I mean, if you're trying to get a Justin Upton, you know, you got to come to the table with something. So if they're not giving up their one and two prospect, I don't think they can make that move. Texas,
I agree.
Texas, you know, they've got the prospects on hand, but I mean, geez, don't they have enough already?
That's my point. I don't know where he's going to play in Texas. I mean, you know, you got a couple of studs in that outfield, and yeah, you could probably platoon him out in left field. But, you know, again, to me it just seems like it's overkill for the Rangers. You know, and then, you know, I've often also heard that they're trying to get in on the Cole Hamill sweepstakes. And, you know, it's like, when's enough for the Rangers? You know, I'm starting to talk about Washington. I'm tired of talking about the Rangers now.
I see. So let's keep moving. Now you know, I sense you're getting excited over there because I've gone through all the teams and I got two left. So I'll go ahead and hit Atlanta. Why I don't think it'll work for Atlanta, you know, they're ran by a corporation. They're not owned by a particular person. They are owned by a corporation who is very thrifty, and they don't really like picking up, you know, a lot of money in their deals. So if Atlanta's out as well, that leaves the Tigers, Hank. And like you said, I'm all on board.
I would like to have him. The only thing right now that's kind of like makes me cringe is that, you know, when talking about the Tigers, and right now everybody is throwing Castellanos' name out there. Okay, if you're going to deal a prospect, you're going to deal a Castellanos, or that's what everybody's asking for. And then Jacob Turner has pretty much flamed out. You know, that would be somebody I would definitely deal. Or Porcello, they figure just as a throw-in, a Delmon Young. But they are also looking for a shortstop or an infield, a third baseman. And that's where Castellanos is there. And for the Tigers are also, they've pretty much told everybody, you know, he's hands off. You know, but I don't know. You know, when you start talking about you trying to win now, does Mike Ilitch pull that trigger for a young man like that? To me, it seems like it's a fair deal.
Okay, so you would do Castellanos for, it's going to be Castellanos and some other pieces, probably small pieces. But would you do Castellanos for Upton?
I would, and here's why, RJ, because you've got a proven commodity, whether they want to talk about, you know, what he's doing this year or not. Again, you've got a proven major league bat, all-star caliber bat, at 24 years old. Now, as well as Castellanos has played, he hasn't sniffed in major leagues yet. Now, you've got these great prospects, and if you are a team like of the Minnesota Twins ilk, that you're going to bring them up and play them and let them see what they're going to do at this level, that's one thing. But you got a proven commodity. You need a corner outfielder. You've got some pieces you can move. Absolutely. I mean, you make that move. You've got an outfield right now that could potentially be an Austin Jackson, a Justin Upton, a Quentin Berry. Then, by the way, you can throw in Andy Dierks or anybody else out there if you want to do that, you know, to spell somebody. But you've got a bat. Now you can do whatever you want to with Delmon Young. So I see it as a win-win for Detroit.
You know, Hank, we're in sync tonight, man. It's something in the air. We in sync. I wrote about it earlier today. I wrote an article on this very topic, Hank. And you know, Tiger fans, while I know they're feeling Castellanos right now, he was the MVP of the Futures game at the All Star Weekend. Tigers fans got to remember the last untradeable prospect we had. I know you remember, Hank. Cameron Maben.
Of course,
he was supposed to be the next great thing. Nobody wanted to move him. And then Miguel Cabrera became available. We move, get Miguel. Cameron Maven's still trying to figure it out. I mean, he had one good year last year, but, you know, he hasn't reached all-star level. He damn sure isn't what Tigers fans thought he would be thus far. And we got Miguel Cabrera. So, I mean, whenever it comes down to prospect versus proven talent, 9 times out of 10, I'm going proven talent. And that's why, you know, I love what Castellanos has done thus far, but you said it, man. He hasn't shown and proved on the big stage. And that's what prospects are for, man, to move and get better any way you can.
Anytime you get a proven young, 24 years old, you're looking at potentially 10 years in the Detroit outfield, okay? I mean, that to me enough. You know, I'm calling Arizona tonight, but that's me.
All right, let's keep it moving. I'm getting all kind of text calling me a homer right now, so I'm gonna get off the Tigers for just a minute, and we're gonna go into the Hall of Fame discussion. You know, the Hall of Fame inductees going in this weekend. I think Sunday it is. Barry Larkin, Ron Santo are going in. Typically, you know, I don't really watch the Hall of Fame ceremonies. It's cool, you know, I can catch the highlights of the speeches, you know, online or on TV. I don't really sit down and watch the whole ceremony. But this got me to thinking, Hank. I mean, we all have our Hall of Fame snubs. If there's one guy out there that you would put in right now that's not in, well, why don't you share with the listeners who it is and why.
Well, you know what? I was going to leave this one for Mike, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. It's got to be Pete Rose. When I look at it, let me tell you why. Listen, when you talk about the Hall of Fame, it's what they did between the lines. And it has to be basically, if your career, you know, encompasses everything you did between the lines, you should be there. Now, I know, you know, we've talked about this and you know, we've talked about what's going to go on with the steroid era players, but when you look at, you know, Charlie Hustle still not being in the league, you know, that to me, just as a player, just it floors me. The man did his job, and was one of the greatest hitters, if not the greatest hitter, in baseball history. And that's the one snub that I get tired of the politics that goes around with it. But as a player, number 14 should be in the Hall of Fame.
I can't argue with that one. How's it the Hall of Fame without the Hit King in it?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, that to me has always bothered me. And I'll tell you something else. I'm going to go on my soapbox for about 32 seconds.
Take your time, brother.
As long as baseball allows the steroid brokers to walk through the major league clubhouses and do all these different things, and they turn a blind eye so this can happen, and they let all of these sacred records fall, then I don't think any of these holier-than-thou sports writers should snub these guys. You know, it's past, it's done, I don't care. When Barry Bonds' time comes, he should be in there. So should Roger Clemens, and so should all the rest of these guys that basically brought baseball back after the strike and they lost the World Series. So, you know, when their time comes, if they did it between the lines and they didn't put anything in place to stop these guys from doing what they were supposed to do, look at them the same way. I think all of them deserve to go in when their time is right, especially Bonds.
You taking all my thunder, Hank. Well, what's going on? I'm going with Jeff Bagwell. And, you know, a lot of people slept on Jeff Bagwell because he played in Houston, and, you know, you didn't really want to watch Houston. It wasn't a fun team to watch. But Bagwell's kind of getting a bad rap because people think he used steroids, which is one of the most unfair arguments that I've heard. Nobody's ever said that Bagwell got caught with steroids. He never tested positive. He wasn't in the Mitchell report. No trainers have come out and said they shot Bagwell up. But if you ever saw the guy was diesel. He was ripped. So
yeah.
People just assume he was using steroids, which is completely unfair. And I think he's getting a bad rap. He's been up for the Hall induction twice. The first time he got 41%. The second time he got 56%. But if you look at this guy's numbers, I mean, the guy hit .297, Hank. He got on base 41% of the time. I mean, damn near half the time he came to the plate, he either got a hit or he got walked. And he slugged .540 with 449 home runs. I pulled out some numbers, and he had an 83.9 win above replacement, which is the eighth highest of all first basemen. It's his WAR is actually higher than a few first basemen who are in the Hall of Fame sitting comfortably. He's higher than Harmon Killebrew. He's higher than Willie McCovey, higher than Rod Crew, who I think Rod Crew might have got in on the first ballot, and he's higher than Eddie Murray. I mean, all Bagwell did was rake. He never got convicted of steroids. Just his body type alone, I don't think you can look at a guy and say, hey, he's using steroids. I mean, with the weight training that these guys are doing, I just think Bagwell's getting a bad rap. His numbers definitely justify him being there, and I think he's being kind of guilty by association with Bagwell. So he's the one guy I'd like to see go ahead and get that 75% vote and get on in.
I agree with you. You know, for years Jeff Bagwell was the Houston Astros, and you know he personified that team with his play. And you know, the sad thing about it is when you start looking at that whole era, that you know, there's only a handful of guys that they have pretty much absolved from, you know, any sort of use. If they stayed healthy, if they had played their entire career, it's almost as though everybody's looking at them with their nose up. You know, one guy, you know, Griffey Jr., because he kept on getting hurt, nobody said he was on steroids. You know, but that's the only reason why. If you talk to anybody, you say, oh, when his time comes, he's going to get in there because he always was hurt. So, obviously, he couldn't have been on steroids. But you're absolutely right about Bagwell. The World Series team and everything, that he personified that team's grit and effort. And you're right. It's an absolute shame that he can't get the proper votes to get in.
Indeed. Let's transition into another Hall of Famer. I'm sure you heard the Reggie Jackson and A-Rod story, right?
Yeah.
All right, for those of you who didn't hear, Reggie Jackson, you know, used to play for the Yankees. He's now a special advisor for the Yankees. He made some comments to Sports Illustrated. He kind of went at some Hall of Famers, said that they really didn't deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. I think he brought up Burt Blyleven. He threw Kirby Puckett in there. Gary Carter, who just recently passed, he said Carter really shouldn't be in the Hall. But then he went at A-Rod, and he said that A-Rod's numbers definitely have to be questioned because of his admitted performance-enhancing drug use. You know, A-Rod kind of shot back, you know, with friends like that who needs enemies, because believe it or not, A-Rod and Reggie Jackson were actually friends. So my question to you, Hank, is was Reggie out of line for these comments, or should he, I mean, where are you at with this? Was he out of line?
Well, here's the thing about you. First of all, you got to understand, when you put a microphone in front of Mr. October's face, that you're going to get what you pay for. This isn't new for Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson used to say stuff during his playing days of, you know, he wished that he could be outside of his body so he can watch himself play. So you're talking about a player that epitomizes arrogance. Was he out of line? He was out of line when he's sitting there, you know, questioning who should be in the Hall of Fame, who should not be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think you do that as a Hall of Famer. I think that's a little bit egregious, you know, in and of itself. I just don't think you go out and start questioning other guys' credentials to get into the Hall of Fame. As far as his comments about A-Rod and about steroid use, you have to understand what is happening. Like I said, I talked about the arrogance of Reggie Jackson. As these guys hit more and more home runs, as these guys become more and more of a relevant story and the Reggie Jacksons of the world become more and more irrelevant, what you start looking at is, okay, my place in history is starting to dwindle a little bit, so I've got to do something to make myself relevant again. So what's the first thing he says? You know, anybody who's a known steroid user, you know, shouldn't make it to the Hall of Fame, because what that does, that gives more credence to me. I think at that point, yeah, he should shut the hell up. I think he goes a little bit too far on that, you know. And if he's going to be an executive of a baseball team and talk about his own players, he should have enough common sense to know where that line is. So, you know, I can understand the Yankees being a little bit pissed off about that. Do I think he's offline? I think if that's the way the man feels, that's the way he feels. But being an executive of a ball team, you've got to kind of like calm that down a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I'm of two different mindsets with this one. On the one hand, I mean, I get kind of teed off when the media blows these stories up, because it kind of serves no purpose to the media. I mean, you jump on Reggie Jackson for giving his opinion. I mean, you ask the guy what he thinks, he gives his opinion, and then everybody else in the media is like, oh, Reggie can't do this, Reggie's way out of pocket. I mean, hell, that's the man's opinion. We can't take his opinion away from him. And if we want players to continue to be honest and tell us what they think, you can't jump on them every time they say something. That being the case, I tend to agree with the Yankees for suspending him, because he is an employee of the Yankees. And you can't just go out and, you know, kind of trash your own guy to make your point. Now, understanding Reggie is an employee of the Yankees, he could have said, you know, I question steroid users' numbers. He didn't have to name A-Rod, so to speak, as an employee. And that's where I think he got into trouble. You know, like you said, Reggie will say whatever is on his mind, but as an employee, you kind of got to pump your brakes if you're taking shots and naming names.
You know, initially I didn't agree with the Yankees suspending him, but then I thought about it a little bit more so, and it's like, okay, you just can't go on your job, anybody, and just start either, you know, bad-mouthing the company or in public, you know, and just saying that they're this and they're that, or you know, an employee and a very well-known employee is this, that, and the other thing. There's going to be some consequences behind that. And when you think about it in that regard, it's like, you know, yeah, you are a celebrity, you are a Hall of Famer, but you work for somebody. And since you work for somebody, you know, there has to be a check and balance there. So I'm with you on that, too. I agree with the Yankees at least trying to just shut him up and say, look, if you're going to stay here, act like you got some good sense, please.
Yeah, right. Who are you going to? Who's more replaceable, Reggie Jackson or A-Rod?
Well, see, I mean, Reggie Jackson, this ain't 1974, 75, 76, 77 anymore, so.
Yeah, they can get another old Yankee to fill his shoes real quick.
That's right.
All right. Hank, we're going to keep it moving. Is there a series of the week that you're looking at this week?
Of course there is. And you know what? We're trying to be diplomatic as much as we possibly can tonight. You know, Mike is not here to really give us that National League spin as he usually do. But I'm sorry out there. You guys, the listeners, you're going to have to bear with me tonight. The Detroit Tigers have won 8 of their last 10. You know, going back before the All-Star break, they've moved into second place, and this weekend starts a series with the first-place Chicago White Sox. It starts off with a series, and I am pissed off with the White Sox, because it started off, the series was going to be Justin Verlander against Sale. Let me tell you something. I was looking forward to that with Chris Sale versus Justin Verlander at Comerica Park. But the White Sox wimped out, looked up and seen who the Tigers were going to pitch the rest of the games, move Sale to the second game on Saturday, and have Jake Peavy going against Verlander. That being said, it's still a battle for first place early in the second half of the season, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you know, coming out of the gates, I saw the Tigers, you know, after the All-Star break, they had the Angels coming up, and now they got Chicago coming up. I thought that this next week would be instrumental in seeing, you know, what kind of Tigers team we really had. And so far, they've been holding it together. I mean, they got 2 out of 3 thus far with the Angels, one more tomorrow. But it looks like they're going to stay hot, so I'm all in. I want to see where they take this thing.
You know, here's the thing about this time of the year. This is the part of baseball. And this is because now, you know, it's make it or break it. Teams are either going to come out the gate like they mean business, or they're going to fade away. You got the trade deadline coming up. You've got a whole lot going on, and you really start to see, you know, what this season is going to shape up to be. So this is the real fun part.
Indeed, you know, I'm keeping my eye on that series. But there's another hot one coming out. Texas and the Angels got a series coming up this weekend as well. Battle for the AL West. You know, beginning of the season, the Angels were left for dead. Pujols wasn't hitting. They call up Mike Trout, and now they're hot. I think they're 5 games out right now, maybe 5.5 with the loss of the Tigers. But, you know, this series as well, it's in L.A., so if they can put a dent in this series, it may go a long ways to, you know, closing that gap in the AL West. So,
you know, and the cool thing about
that one out.
Yeah, the cool thing about that series, too, RJ, is the fact that we're fortunate here in the fact that we didn't have to get Jared Weaver in this series or Heron, and they're going to have them. I think they're pitching that series against Texas, so, and they're at home. So that's going to be another really interesting series to watch, and I think they're going to go home a little bit pissed off. So I'm going to have the Angels in that series.
Yeah, and I know we all got the West Coast bias, so we don't get to see a lot of West Coast ball. But Sunday night, it's the ESPN Game of the Week, 8 o'clock. So check that one out. So now you know what time it is. We're going to take it, pay some bills, do this Dog of the Week. Let's go.
Now we're going to get into our Resistance Digital Dog of the Week. Resistance Digital Solutions. Are you tired of running to the boys in blue? Are you done with listening to sales staff trying to upsell you technology that you don't need? We've all been there. So, what did the real sports guys do? We contacted Resistance Digital Solutions for all our technology needs. They are not there to meet sales quotas or make profit margins. They simply just want to sell you what you need at a fair price. From iPads to PCs to flat screens, TVs, or intricate home theater systems, they customize every solution based on your needs. Check out their website at www.resistancedigital.com or email them at sales@resistancedigital.com for your custom technology solutions today.
Dog of the Week, who you got, Hank?
Well, you know what? I just got through jumping on the White Sox a few minutes ago about moving their pitching rotation around for the series this weekend. But there is one ball player that plays for the White Sox that I got to be my dog of the week, and that's Mr. Kevin Youkilis. This past week, Kevin Youkilis and the White Sox just completing a series with the Boston Red Sox in which Youkilis went back to Boston for the first time since the trade. They asked Youkilis about, you know, his relationship with Bobby Valentine and all these sort of things. He took the high road. He's like, he hasn't thought about it no more. What's done is done. He's a member of the White Sox, and we go on and we play ball. He got on the field the first game. He got a nice ovation from the Red Sox fans, which showed a lot of class. He showed a lot of class all around. He went on to go 3-for-4 in the game on Monday, in which the White Sox lost. In yesterday's game, he had a 3-run home run to help beat his former mates. But in this entire time back to Boston, showed a lot of class, played great ball, outplayed Will Middlebrooks, who actually took his place at third base for the Red Sox. And so for all those reasons, I'm just having Kevin Youkilis be my dog of the week.
All right. I'm going with Ozzie Guillen for my dog of the week. And, yeah, you know, Ozzie got into it this week with Bryce Harper. They had a nice verbal sparring this week. And I saw that it culminated today. I don't know if you saw this already, Hank. But Bryce Harper and the Nationals mailed Ozzie Guillen a bat filled to the top with pine tar. And Bryce Harper autographed it and sent it over to Ozzie. I got a kick out of that, but that's not why Ozzie Guillen is my dog of the week. Ozzie Guillen is my dog of the week because I don't know if you caught it, but if you got Showtime, you definitely got to check out The Franchise. It comes on Wednesday night, so you got to DVR it. You listen to us at 9:30. When we go off, you get your DVR, you check out The Franchise on Showtime. I watched this show, man. It's behind the scenes of the Marlins. And, man, I kid you not, Ozzie Guillen, I've never seen a mastery of the English language as well as Ozzie Guillen. He dropped 9 F-bombs in the first minute and a half of the show. Minute and a half, he dropped 9 of them that quick. So for that alone, I've never seen anybody pull that feat off. Ozzie Guillen is my dog of the week this week.
You know, Ozzie Guillen gets to be the dog of the week simply because Ozzie Guillen is the only manager that I know of that every interview, he can just cuss like a sailor. And don't nobody say nothing, but Selig don't say nothing, don't nobody say nothing. And even when he was talking about that situation with Bryce Harper, I mean, they asked him about it later, and he was still just bleep, bleep, bleep. It's like, okay, well, there you go. But he gets away with it, so I'm with you there.
The Franchise is must-see TV if you got Showtime, man. Definitely, it's a riot.
And that's uncut. You can hear everything he's saying, too, right?
Uncut, a lot of personalities on that team. Logan Morrison was pretty funny. It's a good show. So let's go, Hank. We got the second half is picking up. This is a fun time for baseball. Folks are going to be jockeying for that extra playoff spot. So we're going to lay it out for the listeners. We're each going to give you two stories that we're really looking forward to. In the second half of the season. So, Hank, give me one right now, one off the top. What's the main story that's got you excited about the second half?
You know what? You took the words out of my mouth already. It's got to be the new playoff format. I am real interested in how this new playoff format is going to affect these teams down the stretch. You know, we're only a few days away, a little over a week away from the trade deadline. You look at some of the teams now that are right on the borderline between 8 and 10 games out of first place in their divisions, you know, within, you know, 5 or 6 games within the final playoff spot, 2.5. What are they going to do? Teams that would historically be, you know, sellers because they would just be out of it. You know, now are they buyers? You know, you're looking at teams like that small market teams. What are they going to do this year? Like the Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, that vying for a spot in the National League. You're looking at teams like Oakland, for an example. You know, they're playing decent ball. Do they do something down the stretch? They've been rumored to do some things, you know, crazy down the stretch, try to boost their opportunity, their chances. You know, you got the White Sox. You got the Baltimore Orioles now. That they're fading fast, but they still got a shot in the playoffs, you know. And so what's going to be real interesting is how this all shakes out. You know, so I'm really interested in seeing how these teams act, how they perform down, you know, really in the next couple of weeks. I mean, because that's going to really be, because it's playoff format, you're going to see these teams that you just know that started the season was going to be sellers. Now all of a sudden, because of this playoff format, they're going to put themselves or try to put themselves into a playoff spot, and it's going to be detrimental for RJ for like several of these teams because they're going to make some bold moves, and it's going to really destroy their teams for the next upcoming few years.
Yeah, and that's what I love about this thing. I was thinking about picking that one, but I didn't. But you know what's got me intrigued is just that wild card game. When you've got two teams that are, I mean, a lot of people say, you know, that you didn't really make the playoffs if you get this extra wild card, kind of relating it to the NCAA Tuesday night team, you know, the squad that plays on Tuesday and loses. Do you really make the NCAA tournament if you get put out? But, I mean, we all remember that game between the Tigers and the Twins to get into the playoffs, that one game where they laid it all on the line, or when the Rockies were in that play-in game years ago. I think the Twins and the White Sox actually had one as well. I mean, those games are exciting. So just the mere fact that these two wild-card teams are going to have to play one of those games, I'm on board. I can't wait to see it, man. These teams are going to – I think they're going to go all out to try to make it into that playoff spot. And I think we're going to see some great baseball games in these one-game play-ins.
Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, you just think about it. I mean, you're talking about teams like the Oakland A's, okay, the Baltimore Orioles, you know, Toronto Blue Jays, Kansas. All these teams are still in it somewhere, and it's as crazy as it sounds. You know, you're not even mentioning these teams in August, you know, unless they're having a phenomenal season. But some of these teams are having the same year they had last year. And yet, they have a legitimate shot to make the playoffs. And they watch what teams, like we talked about it, like what Tampa Bay did last year, like what St. Louis did last year. All of a sudden, you get hot at the right time, and now you're just trying to get in. So, you know, while I was kind of hesitant to this when this first started, I see now where this is going to really bring a lot more excitement to a lot more cities, you know, this second half of the season.
That's right. All right, my first story that I'm really looking forward to, Hank, is, and we've kind of poked all around it throughout this show, is this trade deadline coming up. I don't remember a trade deadline where so many big names were involved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked about Justin Upton. Shane Victorino's out there for the taking. Cole Hamels. I mean, Mike and I have been going back and forth with this for the past 2 or 3 weeks, whether or not the Phillies will move Cole Hamels. But for the mere fact that his name is out there, it lends some intrigue to this trade deadline. You got Greinke. You got Matt Garza. I mean, Zach Greinke's been one of the best pitchers all year. You know, Matt Garza, we've seen what he can do, what he did with Tampa Bay. I mean, he's kind of got his hands tied behind his back in Chicago with that team. But, I mean, this guy's a stud pitcher. So I'm really excited about this trade deadline. And you know what did it for me, Hank?
What's that?
I'm going to throw this is what, you know, somebody put out there. I think it was Buster Olney, but don't quote me on this one. But this is what I love about the trade deadline. There was a trade, a short-lived trade today. The Red Sox were going to move Carl Crawford to the Marlins for Hanley Ramirez and Heath Bell. What team says no, Hank?
Wow.
If that deal's out there, what team says no?
That's my point. There's all, but you know what? You mentioned it, though. This is the trade deadline. This is the National Enquirer for baseball, because you're going to hear so many rumors, so many trade rumors. Let me tell you about the one I heard today that I think Buster Olney put this one out there, too, or somebody did. but that the Marlins, this is another one, the Marlins was going to move Hanley Ramirez, let me get this right, I want to say Giancarlo Stanton, and then the young man who used to play with the Tigers, the infielder. His name will come to me in a minute. As a throw-in.
Omar.
Huh?
Omar Infante?
Oh, thank you. Omar Infante to Detroit. For then they was going to get into the, they were going to get Castellanos, they were going to get Delmon Young, and then they were going to get a throw-in player. The reason being is because Castellanos, they're looking for a third baseman, a natural third baseman. Okay, they would throw a throw-in for, and Hanley Ramirez could go to Detroit, and then he could go back to his natural position next year at shortstop, simply because he's not happy right now with what's going on in Miami. I heard that today. So, I mean,
yeah,
you've got all kind of rumors going on. I've heard Matt Greinke. I've heard to Detroit, Ryan Dempster. We talk about, you was fooling with me about the Dodgers, but Dempster is talking about that's his first choice to go to L.A. So you got all kinds of stuff going on. So it's all over the place. Like I said, it's a national choir of baseball this time of year.
Yeah, but you try to sneak that one in there too, Hank. The Dodgers aren't going to the playoffs, brother.
They still there. They still there.
All right, what's the second story you got that you're looking forward to?
Well, you know, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but basically, what are the Phillies going to do? You know, that's the, now, you know, if the trade deadline is the National Enquirer of baseball this time of year, then the Philadelphia Phillies have got to be the Peyton Place. They've got to be the soap opera of the story. Cole Hamels, all these players have been mentioned as far as moving. Cole Hamels, Shane Victorino, Placido Polanco. Can they keep Hunter Pence? You know, right now the Phillies are last in the East. You know, you Ryan Howard's coming back, but what is this team going to do? They're so far out of it right now. You know, are they sellers? Are they buyers? We've gone back and forth on this show about what they're going to do. And it's going to be interesting. This team's either going to stand pat or there's going to be a fire sale. And I think that whatever happens with that is going to really, you know, drive what happens in this whole trade deadline piece. I think the Phillies really hold a real big card in this whole thing.
All right, so what's up? What are they going to do? They got Ryan Howard back. They got Utley back. They got Doc Holliday back. July 31st, is Cole Hamels going to be a Philly?
That I can't tell you. I don't know. And that's the thing. Because, see, if those guys come back and Phillies get hot, then, you know, a lot of those guys are going to come off. All that talk is going to be squashed. But if they go into any sort of swoon, because they've got a ton of contract money. You know, I mean, just they're all over the place. And they got to pay some of these guys. You know, 100 Pence is coming up, I believe, next year. It really depends on what happens in their play, you know. And right now, you don't see a whole lot of change in the Phillies. They're, like I said, they've got a long way to go. The Nationals don't seem like they're going to stop. So it's like, do they say, okay, we might as well just, I don't know. My gut says that a lot of those players are going to be gone. But, you know, they're going to try to get the most value for all of them. So it's a stay tuned.
You on the easy way out. Come on, man.
Okay, if you ask me, I think Victorino's gone. I think Polanco could be moved. I don't think they move Hamels. I mean, right now the only team I've heard that's interested in Hamels right now would be Texas, of course, but Texas is in on everybody. But I think the asking price for him may be too much. You know, he's a local kid. We talked about that as well. I don't think he goes anywhere. I know they're going to have a hard time signing him, but, you know, I think they may let one of the big horses walk first.
Okay, so you're on my side. That's what I was trying to convey to Mike. I mean, they've got, like I said, they just got Doc Holliday back. They just got Ryan Howard back. They just got Chase Utley back. I think that their GM, Ruben Amaro Jr., is looking at it like, you know, we haven't had our horses all year.
let's see what we can do with our horses. So I think he's going to wait a little while. And I just think the deadline is going to pass and Hamels is still going to be a filly. I can't see them giving up Cole Hamels, and knowing how passionate those fans are, I mean, they'll have a fit. They'll look at it as the Phillies giving up. And I don't think you can do – I think they should do it, but I don't think they will do it.
I don't either. Not with Hamels. Again, I would see them, you know, looking – I could see a Holiday. And this may go against conventional wisdom, but I can see a Holiday or a Lee being moved before I can see Hamels at this point.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that too. I mean, Cole Hamels is a relatively young pitcher.
Right.
Why not move? I mean, if it's money that's hampering you up, why not get rid of some of that money?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is trading Doc Holliday, who can still get you a lot of pieces back, or trading Cliff Lee, because they're older. You free up some money to sign your younger guy.
Right. Right. Because again, when you look at Philadelphia, even if you were to do that, you would, as you stated, you're going to save you some money. You still got a Hamels. You still have a Holiday orally. You know, you still have a decent pitching staff. You know, and you know you've been struggling in other areas. Your team is aging. We discussed this before. You know, and you would think about it with them if they were to even make a move. They would be a team that, quite frankly, and we haven't really thought about this, but thinking outside of the box, they would be a team that, you know, I would look at is trying to get a Justin Upton, because they got pieces that, you know, Arizona can use to help them win right now. They've got playoff experience. You know, I'm not trying to put nothing in the head of any GM out there, but, you know, when you look at the West, why wouldn't you talk to Philadelphia about some of those pieces that they got to try to get you over the top and see if you can't steal that down the stretch?
Yeah, they said they're looking for some major league starting pitchers. Philly's got it.
Exactly. And they've got them a nice, you know, bargaining chip in that young player. And he will look real nice in the Philadelphia outfield.
Indeed. All right, my second story that I'm looking forward to is this NL Central race, Hank. You've got four teams that can make a move in the Central. I mean, you know, you got the Reds, who are right now tied first with the Pirates. You know, the intriguing story there is, you know, you got a small market ball club in the Reds. Shout out to Mike, who's not here with us. But small market club, can they hold on to first place with Joey Votto going down? I mean, he's out for, what, 3 or 4 weeks?
Right.
Because he hurt his knee. So, you know, I'm interested to see if the Reds can still hang on to first place. Then you got the Pirates, who haven't been – played 500 ball since Barry Bonds left. And, I mean, they're well over 500 right now. Like I said, tied for first place. Are the Buccos going to be able to stay in the hunt? I mean, it's a million stories in the NL Central. You got Andrew McCutchen, who's killing the ball. Can he continue to carry this team for a full season? I don't think he can. I think the Pirates will fall out of it, but yet again, it's an interesting story to watch. I mean, you know, going down the list, you got St. Louis Cardinals in that division. They're not too far out of first place, and we all know what the Cardinals do in the second half. They always seem to be in the mix. They're always right around there, and like we said, they got the extra wild card spot. So, you know, the Cardinals are going to be damn near in it, or they're going to make a run sooner or later. So what do you do with that? And then finally you got the Brewers, who, you know, I'm not ready to count out, not the way Ryan Braun's been playing. It's legitimately four teams that can make a run, and you may get two teams out of that division to get into the playoffs. So I'm definitely watching that NL Central.
I am too, and you make a valid point. And you look at St. Louis, and they're pretty much in the same position that they were this time last year. And dare I say, I think they were in worse position last year when they finally made their run and went on to win the World Series. I think Pittsburgh is a great unknown here. I know last year they was playing good ball, and then they kind of swooned at this time last year and just kind of went away. But we've seen the emergence of Andrew McCutchen to the point where, and you also got Hanrahan over there that's saving ball games left and right. They're not blowing them. In contrast, when you look at Milwaukee, Axford has had their closer has had a hard time closing out ball games now all of a sudden, you know, where he was lights out last year. You have Cincinnati that's been playing great ball. Cueto's been pitching lights out, but now Joey Votto is down. You know, so that they're going to go back. And I think because of that, I don't think Pittsburgh is necessarily going to fall out. And again, you know, this has been the topic du jour. After the trade deadline, we don't know what these teams are going to look like. You know, and truly, if a Pittsburgh makes a move, if a Cincinnati makes a move, then we're going to see a lot more than what we expect right now. I just don't see Pittsburgh. You saying they're going to fall off because you don't think McCutchen can sustain it. And I'm one to believe they're going to be in it, you know, all the way to the end. And that's only because nobody has really taken charge of the Central, you know. And because of that, I think Pittsburgh is going to be there.
It's definitely, like I said, it's definitely going to be interesting. You brought up Axelrod, the Brewers closer. He actually lost his job the other day. They're going to Frank Rodriguez now. K-Rod.
Yeah. F-Rod, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, they're going to be going battling back and forth. And, you know, don't sleep on this Pittsburgh team. You know, I think that we looked at them early in the year, and it's like it's typical Pittsburgh. But they are a very young, very talented team. They're very well managed, very well coached. And I think last year should have been really a peek into what this team can do. They played, you know, arguably great ball for, unfortunately, maybe just 100 ball games before they fell apart. They fell apart simply because I don't think they realized what they could do down the stretch. And I think that they needed that superstar presence. And I think they've got that now with McCutchen. And I believe they're going to make a move. I think they're going to be you know, non-Pittsburgh-like. I believe they're going to make a move at the deadline to do something to bolster their chances. Again, you know, with that different playoff spot, I think they're going to be there. My gut tells me that until somebody takes St. Louis out, they may take that division. But I think Cincinnati is going to be there the entire time. I expect St. Louis to make a move. I think, as I said last week, I think Milwaukee is going to be the odd man out this year.
There it is. It's going to be one to watch. So we're going to get ready to close this thing out, Hank. Is there anything else you got burning on your chest to get off? I mean, we don't have Mike this week, so we got some extra talk time. Is there anything that you've been burning to get off your chest for a little while?
Yeah, I do. You know, I've been taking a lot of flack about my insistence of sticking with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Now, I look at the Dodgers, and I look up, and they're three games out of first place. They lost arguably the best player in the National League for an extended period of time. Then they lost their second man in Andre Ethier for a period of time. Both of those players are coming back. I watched the game the other night where they played the San Diego Padres, and they looked abysmal. I saw a game yesterday in which, where they won a game when Kemp hit a home run to win the game, a walk-off homer. I still believe that the Dodgers have a chance to make the playoffs and still have a chance to win the division. Probably not so much more because the Giants have proven to have one of the most lights-out pitching staffs in the National League. Having said that, please don't forget the fact that, you know, they were just bought by Magic Johnson and crew. I expect them to make a move at the trade deadline. Again, Ryan Dempster is rumored to be, that's his first choice. And I expect them to make a push. So I am staying on my soapbox for the Dodgers. And, you know, with pop in hand, RJ, I still believe I just are going to make the playoffs this year.
You're going to lose that bet, brother.
Okay. We will see. I'm not letting up.
Yeah, we're going to see. All right.
That's another week of Inside the Park. Listeners, check it out. We went over last week. We probably did about an extra 15 or 20 minutes. So if you were listening live, you did not hear the extra show, go on over to iTunes, search Real Sports Guys podcast, and you'll see the Inside the Park show from last week. Definitely want to download that. Listen to the extra 15 or 20 minutes we did. We were just riffing, going off the cuff. So check that out. And we thank you guys for listening. We'll check you out next week, same time, 9:30, 8:30 Central. Peace.
Ball game over. Drive home safe.